You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 27th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter, Matthew Film Guy, it's his turn. Also, more updates on the financial fraud unit. And sorry, conservatives, science says you are dumb. A little bit more on GDP numbers. And our buddy, the mayor from East Haven, Connecticut, 500 tacos for dinner last night. More on that in the as the program unwinds. And Occupy Wall Street sings their way through a disruption of a foreclosure auction in Brooklyn. And another update to the mega upload story. All that and more on this program. However, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, and you know what that means. That means it's time for Cliff Schechter. But before we get to Cliff Schechter, of course, we need Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
And I should mention that we probably need to add to that song in some way. I'm not sure how we would do this, but media mogul Cliff Schechter.
Well, Jimmy Reefer Cake's the rhymer, so maybe you can find something that rhymes with mogul.
Mogul.
Schmogul?
I don't.
Bagel?
Actually, that's quite. Yes. Have a bagel. He's a media mogul. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
That's actually quite a challenge. Of course, Cliff Schechter, I guess it's now been a couple of weeks, so we're a little bit late on this, but We Act Radio, 1480 AM in Washington, D.C., has launched. And among the other great liberal talkers on that program, if you have been late to the live streaming cast of our program, you can hear on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights the free version, plus sometimes a little added extra, of the Majority Report on We Act Radio at 8 p.m.
We worked hard to pick some talented folks, Sam, and of course...
Well, you made some mistakes in some instances, but I'm not...
That's true.
But if it benefits me, I have no problem with that.
For example, yeah, we allow you to be on there when you've got me on, and that's just going to drag your ratings right down.
That's right.
But no, everything's going really well. We've got some of the usual syndicated suspects. We've got people, a very talented block in the evening, which I very much enjoy, yourself, and an hour of Shannon Moore's show. People may be familiar with Shannon, funny and intelligent lady.
Yeah, she's up in the in Alaska.
And the great white beyond.
Indeed.
We're not talking about the one that Newt Gingrich goes to for weekend barbecues. We're
right.
Talking about the one up north. And then speaking of the opposite of the great white beyond, we've got hysterical and awesome guy, Elon James White, who, you know, this week in blackness, great show. So So that you're in that block in the evening, and Nicole Sandler, it's a great block, and we love it. And then on weekends, we've got some shows we're producing, too. We've got David Schuster has a show, which we produce, which is fantastic. Take Action News on Saturdays. Mark Levine is coming out of D.C. It's
crazy. Not to be confused with Mark Levin.
That's right. Exactly. Not the guy who's the crazy guy who hangs out with Hannity and nips at his heels.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, good stuff. A lot of other programs, too, and I don't want to start – if I name any more people, then I'll just forget large blocks, but great stuff. Ring of Fire's on the weekends, too.
That's right.
You may have heard a guy named Sam Cedar do some interviews for that show, so you get, like, double Sammy.
That's right.
What more can you want?
On this week's Ring of Fire, Bobby Kennedy returns to the program after a couple of weeks off, and we have a great conversation. It's always such a pleasure to when I record it, I'm just sort of shocked that I'm having this conversation with Bobby Kennedy. But
he's a smart dude, no doubt.
Very smart guy. And obviously just an incredible amount of just walking history. But be that as it may, speaking of walking history, Newt Gingrich. Maybe soon to be.
He's more waddling history, if we're going to be honest. But.
Now, all right, let's start with the debate. It was not as fun as I had hoped it would be. And I got to say, you know, before we get into that, you know, Allison Kilkenny of Citizen Radio had a tweet last night. And it was, been watching CNN for 10 minutes and have seen a commercial to ban legal immigration and one for domestic gas drilling. So if anybody wants to, if you ever have a question as to why CNN has sort of moved so far, you know, for a while they were co-branding themselves with the Tea Party. If you have any questions as to why that is, you can see it in terms of the advertising. Look, these outfits make a lot of money from political advertising, and the side that gives them more money is going to be the side that the entity perceives as where their audience is.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to say that that we didn't suddenly get treated to the delights of Eric Erickson, which I love that name, by the way, and Dana Loesch because of their natural intrinsic talent?
That's right.
That suddenly they became analysts to people that have virtually no knowledge of politics, you know, on a stage with whatever I think of Alex Castellanos, you know, or Mike Murphy or some of those. Although I don't know if Mike Murphy is still a guy who they have on there, but Alex Castellanos, I may differ with his measures and what he's done, like when he did the famous Jesse Helms racist commercial, but he knows something about politics. And so you have him versus Carville, and it's an interesting debate. But those guys, they suddenly came out of nowhere, and I think you're giving us the explanation for why they suddenly were added to the lineup.
That's right, and it's very easy to figure it out. I mean, that's just where they're buttering their bread, and it is a, you know, it's a business. And so the you can find the solutions to that or the answers to those questions based upon where their money is coming from. But be that as it may, the debate last night, once you got past the just the ridiculousness now of these debates, I just hope it doesn't happen when we see the actual presidential debates. But the, you know, where they introduce these
now coming from the back of the stadium, making his way to the podium.
I mean, I was laughing my ass off of that too, Sam. It was just. I was like, are you kidding me? It was like I meant to tweet it out. I was live tweeting. I think I forgot to. It's like, you're watching a boxing match. I mean, it's hysterical. It's like, they announce it in that sort of a tone. I'm expecting like a gladiator to come out, and it's freaking like Ron Paul.
Now, are we going to have to be, listen, I appreciate the national anthem as much as the next guy. You know, we do it at the baseball games. But now we're doing it in the middle of these, at the beginning of these debates. Can't they actually just do the national anthem in the moments leading up to the debate so that we can actually spend these 2 hours watching a debate as opposed to this sort of pageantry?
Or at the very least, could they try to estimate when the seventh inning is, and then they could do God Bless America?
That's right. We'll do it during one of the commercial breaks. I mean,
I agree with you. It's just, again, I'm all for the national anthem. I'm all for God Bless America. And just as God Bless America, in my opinion, since 9/11 got ensconced in there, when you're at a baseball game, you're trying to have fun,
right,
with your kids and enjoy, and you should be singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, we suddenly have to sing this deadly serious thing. Again, You know, it's just this, it's the appearance of trying to insert God and patriotism into everything.
Now,
you know, and
I got to imagine if this is happening in late January, by the time we have debates in the spring and the summer, they're going to open up the top of the auditorium where the debate's holding, and the Blue Angels are going to do like a flyover.
Inside the actual auditorium.
It will be an amazing production feat.
While now, you're saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
So, all right, give me your sense of the debate, because I got to say, I don't know how Newt Gingrich goes into this debate and isn't the first person to bring up Swiss bank accounts. He had to sort of reluctantly address it after Wolf Blitzer brought it up. Now, maybe I don't understand the demographics of Florida, but I do know that over the past 3 or 4 weeks, Mitt Romney's stature with white men who make under $50,000
has been destroyed.
And I got to think Swiss bank account, even if it's just like a funny comment.
Because it's got Swiss in it. Work Swiss in there. Work. I mean, you know, for people, you know, who are in that demographic potentially, I mean, mention the fact that he's got money in banks in Luxembourg.
That's the thing, is that, you know, you don't even need to go into the questions of, hey, you released your 2010 taxes. We know there was this big deal where the federal government found tax evaders on the list of the UBS Swiss Bank. And they were all given essentially amnesty for the year with some minor fines and no criminal. You don't even have to bring up that point. You just have to say, you know, you just go up there and you just look over at Romney and just go, you know, you make a Swiss clock joke. You just say, you know, I brought, now that Mitt Romney's been good enough to close his Swiss bank accounts, is he going to hand out some free chocolate that he got from the, you know, for the deposits?
Oh, my God. You could have so much of Swiss Miss. You know, you could be you could start singing The Hills Are Alive. I mean, think of all the possibilities.
Now,
you know?
I may not, you know, maybe they have internal numbers that show like, oh, we want to see the kinder, gentler Newt. But he seems as if basically Sheldon Adelson dropped him a line and said, look, some of us have Swiss bank accounts too. Let's just not go there or something. It just seemed to me that Newt had basically said, okay, I've had my fun. I have maxed out how much I'm going to get for my speaking fees. And now it's time for me to sort of just shore up my statesmanlike look and just, you know, call it quits.
I was watching for a while, and I realized at some point, you know, in the middle there, I was like, the guy that obviously was on fire, that one debate to me going away, was Rick Santorum.
Yep.
I mean, I thought, you know, in the end, I guess it's a win for Romney in that if it's not a win for Gingrich, it's a win for Romney. So, you know, because the vote gets split potentially, so against him. And so in that way, you could say it is. But and I thought Romney obviously was better than Gingrich because Gingrich was terrible. But in the end, I just didn't understand why it was Santorum that was providing the most compelling critique. I mean, on that healthcare thing, mm-hmm. He just wouldn't let Romney off. I mean, he just that was an awkward sort of, well, you don't have to get angry about it. I mean, made Romney look like an idiot, which isn't tough to do. So I mean, I just didn't understand that. You're right. There were so many softballs to hit out of the park, and Newt, who always has his finger on the pulse of the cultural populism of the resentment, because frankly, I think he understands it so well because that's the way he grew up. You know, he was that until he started getting rich. So I think he and in Florida with all the home foreclosures, he did accuse Romney at some point of being, you know, profiting off of foreclosures, and that was good. But you were waiting for him to expand that, you know, and really go in further, particularly with that ad that he released about blood money. Did you see that thing
before the
debate?
We're actually going to post that on our blog at majority.fm. The sound, you need to sort of see it to really appreciate
it. It's awesome.
Now,
I mean,
that's a one-minute ad.
I only wish that any liberal would ever run an ad like that against Romney.
But that's an ad. That's a one-minute ad, but it's an ad for what appears to be another Mitt biopic that is going to come out. Like you say, entitled Medicare Blood Money.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know what you're right. Maybe somebody to talk with him. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Although, and let's bring up one of your listeners, who is also a fantastic writer, who I think is listening right now at America Blog, Gaius Publius,
right.
I'm probably mispronouncing, brought up a really interesting point about the blood part of it potentially being a reference, and actually a subtle dog whistle attack on Mormonism. Because he sent me a link, and God, I wish I'd read it at the time, but about this thing about a blood sacrament. You need to have him on at some point if he's willing to do it, because he can explain it better than me. But that it's actually, for people who know, especially for evangelicals who are, you know, follow stuff, it might be an attack on Mitt's Mormonism.
Well, there's definitely,
which is really interesting.
I'll tell you something. There was definitely that quality of, like, sinister secret society. That was definitely the subtext, and they're still ringing that dog whistle. Because, you know, I don't have a sense of Florida in terms of those demographics again, but, you know, when you're talking the Republican Party, you're always talking about a sizable evangelical base.
In the panhandle section, north especially, I would think that if that's who, you know, that those are, and the guys under 50,000, that, I mean, that's Gingrich's core group. I would think in Florida he's maybe shooting for that. He's sort of trying to kind of weave his way, you know, thread the needle between shooting for that demographic while also trying to attack Romney as anti-immigrant and win the Hispanic vote too. Mm-hmm. You know, he puts together that coalition. I think they're thinking, okay, Romney could win the over $200,000 a year guys in the Republican Party, and you know, he takes it. By good, you know, and I think that's what they were doing. But in the end, again, you pointed out that Swiss bank, you know, attack. It's not like the Cayman Islands, particularly when you're down in Florida, you're not, you know, when you're talking about Cuba, I mean, I think there's almost an invitation to make a Cayman Islands joke.
Yeah, and you also, you know, earlier in the day, and I think I remember seeing like a Greg Sargent post yesterday in the Washington Post saying like, this is going to be a big issue in the debate tonight. Mitt Romney, it came out that his filings, you know, some of his IRS filings didn't match up with some of his ethics.
That's right, the FEC disclosures, and yeah, they didn't match. That's exactly right.
And he addressed, and by the way, the $2 million difference in these filings by saying it's a trivial amount. Now, you know, the funny thing is, I think for a guy who makes $20 million a year and doesn't have to work a day for it, you know, just basically lets that $50,000 a day or whatever it is enter his bank account, $2 million, probably it's trivial. But I got to think that for the for 99.8% of Americans, 98.9%, and then you got to even figure that some of those 0.1%ers are pretty stickler about $2 million, that the idea that $2 million you could perceive as trivial would also put you out of the mainstream. But he did not.
Right.
You're
right. It's like the $374,000 a year that was just, oh, it was not nothing, you know, that he made on the side,
right,
speaking. I mean, that became a big issue. And the truth is that once we found out what Mitt actually made in a year, I was like, wow, for him, that is nothing.
Right. I mean,
so
if
no,
you're making
no
$3,000 a day, folks, and you're running for president for 6 years, you got six kids or five kids, you've got four houses, you've got all these things you're juggling. Yeah, you know what? You know, $370,000 a year, you just, whatever. I mean, it's that.
That's right. I mean, that's. I mean, if you look at what he made, I think it's like, you're right, it's like $57,000 or something a day, I think it comes out to. So what's that? You know, was that about seven? That's a week. I mean, right?
Right.
It's a week
it's
of
a
work.
Week. Wow! I took a vacation. I mean, here's the larger point too that you know, I haven't seen anybody make the point. But if Mitt Romney believes that $2 million. Is a trivial amount, and he very well may. I mean, like we say, it seems.
I would think if you're at that point where you're making 21, you know, 20, 21, 22 million a year. Remember, those are just the recent years.
Right.
The more active participant in Bain, my guess is it was somewhat higher than that.
Right. We're not talking about a you know, a guy who has a 1 year sort of at the peak of his career. You know, like, I got a $20 million movie payoff, but I'm never going to make that money. This is how much money
that's
he
in
makes.
Retirement.
Right.
Is
right.
What that is.
He's got you know, $130 million in an IRA. You know,
right.
This guy.
And those of you listening out there who get Social Security, that's his Social Security.
$20 million a year plus his Social Security. Yeah, so he's also going to get Social Security payments, which, you know, I have no problem with if he's paid into the system. Now, arguably, he hasn't had wages in a long time. He gets all his money through capital gains, so maybe he hasn't been. But
that's going to hurt him when he gets less than Social Security back, I guess.
But where is the argument that Mitt Romney proves that tax rates can go higher, personal income tax rates and capital gains rates can go higher without in any way affecting the behavior of rich people. Because if this guy's saying $2 million is trivial, then that proves the argument that rich people are unaffected by a 7-8% raise in their taxes because they perceive this as trivial and it doesn't in any way affect their behavior. They don't even pay attention to this money. Like literally, Mitt Romney could sit on the couch. $2 million could fall out of his pocket, get wedged behind the cushions, and he wouldn't even know it.
You know he finds crap like that all the time. He like just goes around the house where you find like a quarter, I find a quarter, whatever.
Right.
Like, you know, he lifts up the cookie jar and there's like $750,000 sitting there in bills.
Right. It's like, oh, you know, that picture of him doing the laundry in the
hotel.
It's, you know, it's released. people, if you haven't seen this picture, I guess it was Tag or Trip or Biff or one of the
Palin kids. What's up with that, by the way? Did he and Palin get together to discuss names for kids? I know we're supposed to leave kids out of it, but I can't help it. Come on.
Well, Tag tagged a photo of his father on Facebook, you know, doing the laundry in the basement of a hotel. And you know there's got to be time where Ann pulls the stuff out of the dryer and is like, oh, Mitt, I'm sorry. I found this check for $5 million and in your pants and we washed it. And he's just like, can you see what it says? No, don't worry about it. We can either get him to issue or whatever. It's trivial. It's trivial. It's spilt milk.
What's amazing to me is like, you know, that don't they have advisors, first of all, that aren't as rich as him? Because those are the guys that are supposed to tell him that $375,000 is a lot of money and you don't make $10,000 bets and things like that. But they're also supposed to tell him that you really generally, if you want to look like you're a normal person, which is virtually impossible for you, You don't take your white button down shirt to the dry cleaners and get it pressed and put it on when you're doing laundry.
Yeah,
that's really not the way most people in America, you know, do their laundry.
I want to know what it is that they're washing there. I got to think it's just underwear and just socks, right? I mean, everything else he gets, it seems to be that it's all pressed. But you know, of course, I'd be willing.
You know, he presses the underwear. It's that magic Mormon underwear. He probably presses that stuff.
I thought it would. That's what's magic about it. That the underwear.
Oh, it magically
itself?
Presses itself. That's a great point.
It's like maybe a wash and wear type of thing.
Oh, that's disgusting and yet so funny.
All right. The point being here that. Newt really seemed to be the dialing it back a little bit. Now, it remains to be seen. Everybody's writing Newt off, but I don't know what's going to happen in Florida. I think, you know, we definitely saw the revenge of the Republican establishment just like 5 days ago. People were writing, there is no more Republican establishment, but Bob Dole came out. You have a lot of people came out, and it still, I think, is one of the sort of the most interesting parlor games now is which one of these guys is going to be the worst candidate. And, you know,
I agree. They've both shown themselves to be terrible. I mean, honestly, it almost seems like Rick Santorum would be the best of any of them.
No, because Rick Santorum, none of his craziness is getting revealed in the debate because nobody's going after
him. Which it would.
So
right, it would.
Always,
you're right. In a general election, it would. That's
right.
Point.
I mean, Nikki was looking at the debate and she's going like, Rick Santorum seems good. And I just said, you just have no... You have no idea. The reason he looks good is because no one's paying attention to him. Like, literally, he's speaking. People nod, and it's like, it's so nice to see the kids' table pipe up. They're very cute. As long as they stay quiet, that's fine.
Look at them wearing their party hats over
right.
there.
Right. I mean, look, you know, people forget Rick Santorum, when he knocks Newt Gingrich for lobbying, Rick Santorum ran and developed K Street on the Senate side in a way that was unprecedented.
The K Street Project, not to mention he was at, you know, he was at a right-wing think tank, which was handed to him when he left, when he lost in that Senate race, which if those places aren't lobbying shops, they're almost the same thing. I mean, how many degrees of separation are there? He was doing similar stuff.
Right.
So, no, you're right about that, and that's a great point. It's just, it really is just, I wouldn't say that it's anything about him. It said that these guys reflexively, I mean, think about in the last couple of days how many times they've opened their mouths on stuff, and immediately later it's proven they lied. arrest.
Right.
You know, he said that he, Newt Gingrich said that they'd offered witnesses or people to say that he didn't have an open marriage to ABC. Yeah, he offered his two daughters. That was just a blatant lie. That whole thing with John King, lie. You know, Mitt Romney starts screaming and yelling about his investments in Fannie and Freddie. Right away you find out he says it's in a blind trust. It's not in a blind trust. Lie. I mean, the two of them, I wrote a column a bunch of, you know, I don't remember, a month or 2 months ago, and I said, the truth is that these two guys come from such different backgrounds and different parts of the party, but what makes them so interesting is they're almost the same guy. In that they both were started off as Rockefeller moderate Republicans. They both moved to the right when it became necessary for them because they went with wherever the wind was blowing. So that's why Santorum can go after both of them on having been, for example, the health care mandate, because they both were for years, because that was the Heritage Foundation plan. They both basically were mainstream Republicans for years, even if Gingrich was a little bit vicious in his attacks, you know, who on a whole number of issues, from global warming to health care, whatever, were not where they are now and have changed. They also both literally seem to be pathological liars. So in the end, I don't think it's that Santorum's impressive. You're right. A general campaign against him, an election campaign, would show what a zealot he is and the rest. It's just that these two guys fall over each other to make themselves look stupider and stupider. I mean, you know, Romney gets up there last night again and talks about firing somebody. And you're just like, are you really bringing up that word? Again, are you really looking at somebody in this sort of a stage and saying, I would fire you after what's happened to you? He still just doesn't get it. It's now, amazing.
And you know, like I say, if Romney was the nominee, then we would – I mean, excuse me. If Santorum was in the lead, we would definitely see he would be done within moments. If he was where Gingrich was in terms of stature in the race, he'd be done in minutes because
They bring up the Terry Schiavo thing, and he was right on a fundraiser, you know, when he was – that's really why he was down there. I mean, you're right. And as I said, it's really not that he's – they're not paying attention to him as part of it. And the other part of it is it's really not that he's very good. It's that the other two guys are so bad.
Right.
And even when they know the spotlight's on them, they still just pathologically lie and say things they know they're going to get busted on. They still, you know, have changed every position known to man and woman. These two are just such cartoon characters. You know, and they keep attacking the other one for the same thing, and then you find out 2 minutes later, wait, you did the same thing. I mean, it's comical. Fannie and Freddie and the healthcare mandate and global warming and, you know, on and on and on. They've both done the same exact stuff, and yet they go after each other, you know. And so you're right. I mean, Santorum, in a general, I mean, once the stuff on his sort of visceral loathing of women, of choice and of gay rights and the rest would come out, I think you'd see he'd become so spooky, not to mention the lobbying stuff on him.
Yep.
That he'd be done. But I think that's really all that party can produce at this point. So
it's true.
You know,
their bench is pretty weak. Now, my favorite line of the debate actually happened after the debate when Mitt Romney came down off the stage, talked to, I think, one of the CNN reporters.
Gloria Borger, and then blew her off, literally on camera.
He said, she said something like, you were attacked, and you really attacked back tonight. And he goes, well... This is my favorite line. I'm not a shrinking violet. I mean, does anybody but a shrinking violet even use those terms? I'm not a shrinking violet. But I want to say, before I get in trouble for ignoring Ron Paul, I want to say that Ron Paul told a mess of whopping lies himself last night, not the least of which that Fannie and Freddie Mac were responsible for the financial crisis, that the community
– also important.
The community,
I'll let you finish. Sorry.
Community Reinvestment Act had anything to do with it. He didn't seem to answer any question. You know, if you ask this guy a question – that doesn't directly have to do with his wheelhouse of essentially fiat money and foreign policy, he will somehow bring it back to the words gold or very close to gold.
Right.
And so, you know.
And the thing about it, that things were better. I just think we have to get this in here. So
exactly.
Before Medicare and Medicaid, you didn't see people out in the street, and to which my response to that was maybe not on Mitt Romney's street.
Right, or maybe not
on
Ron Paul's street. But the fact of the matter is that Medicare and Social Security, these things did not just descend upon us from God. These things were a response to real severe problems in this country. And I had like one or two tweeting people who are like, what are you talking about? What are you claiming? He's lying. You don't know anything about history. If you think that there was no poverty, abject poverty in this country in 1920 before the Depression.
They have these weird things called statistics that tell you how much higher the poverty rate was back then, how many more kids were in it, how many more people starved. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And I wrote my whole column, my syndicated column this week, on the moment when that woman got up and asked the question about, you know, I've been working for 30 years. I lost my job last year. Mm-hmm. I have no health care. And all four of them had no answers for her. And the biggest problem was they couldn't just wave her off because she wasn't like the Palestinian-American Republican guy where they're all just basically like, F you, we don't care about you, you don't really exist anyhow.
You're invented.
You know, right, you're an invented person. This was a woman who, you know, looked like a suburban soccer mom, could have been one of their spouses. So she didn't look like an occupier. They couldn't just tell her to go take a shower, you dirty hippie. So they had to actually try to respond to what she was asking them. And none of them, as you noticed, their answers ranged at anything from like things were better before Medicare and Medicaid to it's the government's fault that you know that healthcare prices are going through the roof, to nobody was kicked out in the street before, to well you have a few tax deductions for healthcare that you can't afford anyhow because you don't have a job. You would have a job if we were president, because President Obama is the one who's cost us all these jobs. Because, of course, if any one of them were president, the unemployment rate would be 0%.
Right.
I mean, they had no answers for it. They don't. And that, to me, I thought was a classic moment in the debate that just showed all these guys for the fools of that the ideology is that controls them, because it has no answers.
And let me ask you this. Let me ask you this in terms of that Palestinian-American Republican.
That's probably in Gitmo now.
Well, you've got that's. I tweeted out like, who's going to escort this guy to his car after the debate tonight? But you've got the question was posed, if I remember correctly, I think to Gingrich and Santorum. Now you got to ask yourself, if you're Wolf Blitzer, used to work at AIPAC, incidentally, why are you asking question? Why are you asking that question of Santorum? Santorum is clearly not one of the front runners, and Santorum is going to give you, just in terms of a matter of degree, if any different from Newt Gingrich. The person to ask that question of
Ron Paul
is
absolutely.
Ron Paul. And
that's one a great point Sam. I didn't even think about
the
that.
The one point where this guy is relevant in that entire debate, the former AIPAC employee doesn't ask that question of Ron Paul.
That's a fantastic, and I didn't even think of that. I mean, kudos for even – that's a great point.
All right.
Is that we've got these guys all on the same page, yep. And they have somebody you – know, go ahead. Sorry. Yep.
Well, all right, just briefly, because I want to touch on the State of the Union, because we just have a minute or two here. But, some people said, President Obama really seemed to have a lot of confidence in the State of the Union. And my response to that is, yeah, of course he is, because he's been watching these debates, too. He's been watching how bad if there's anybody in the country who has to be shocked right now at his chances in the reelection, or it has to be President Obama, because even Bob Dole, when he was coming out and slamming Newt Gingrich, said the only way to avoid a landslide is to nominate Mitt Romney. Not the only way to win is to nominate Mitt Romney. The only way to avoid a landslide is to nominate Mitt Romney.
Well, think about where we were 6 months ago, and think about when Rick Perry first entered the race. And it seemed like he was going to be the Reagan-like character. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, my God, we could, and let's be honest. You know, we people like us and people who are smarter than us economically, like Paul Krugman pointed out, that the stimulus was not big enough that President Obama passed. But you know what? So things didn't turn around as quickly as they could have had that thing been bigger. But you're seeing the effects now of some of these programs, and guess what's happening? It's taken longer than it should have, but the economy is getting better because the stimulus did work, and measures they've taken have worked. Bailing out the car industry, which is one of the best things, automobile industry, which is one of the best things that I've always given Obama credit for, has helped. And so in the long term, even though they didn't happen as quickly as I think it could have, it has happened. And so what do you got going on right now? Obama's looking out there at unemployment going down, the economy starting to improve, and this group of literally troglodytes up on the stage, this group of clowns just going after each other and making a mockery of the entire other party. So of course he's confident.
I agree with you on the auto bailout. I'm not so convinced about the economy, and I think frankly the growth is anemic. But in terms of the perception of the establishment and the narrative that's in the media, I think it's improving enough for them to make the argument that it's improving at this point.
Well, that was my point. I want to be very clear. Right. I'm not trying to say it's getting great and it's going terrifically. I'm just saying before the unemployment rate had been growing. You know, things that now suddenly the unemployment rate's going down. So it is getting slightly better. I'm not saying it's where it should be and needs to be. Don't get me wrong. But generally, if the economy is in the process of improving, even albeit slowly during an election year, an incumbent is in pretty good shape historically. So that's all I was getting at. You know, I agree. I mean, I think everything from the stimulus to a variety of other things, as we've discussed, should have been much larger and much more aggressive. And then I think things would have gotten a lot better a lot sooner. But
the GDP results were announced today, and you know there's still some serious concerns about deflation. And you look at the 4.6% drop in government spending, albeit it was defense spending, but you cut the defense spending and you spend it other places is really what we should be doing. That 4.6% drop in government spending lopped almost a full percentage point off of growth in that quarter. And when we get growth, we get employment. I mean, that's the way it works. All right. Well, we've run out of time, Cliff. It's always a pleasure.
Can I say one quick thing before you kick me off?
Of course.
Just because I want to give credit where credit is due, our pal Gaius jumped out on Twitter and sent out Mormon Blood Atonement is the name of it. So if people want to look it up and see what it is that maybe Newt Gingrich was implying about Mitt Romney and his religion in that attack, it is called Mormon Blood Atonement. There you go.
That was not me.
Thank you for having me on, as always, Sam.
Cliff Schechter, you can check him out. What is it, cliffschechter.com? Just tweet. Tweet. Follow him on Twitter, and you'll find all that
Twitter.
Stuff.
I'll have a new website up soon, and we can all talk about that and be happy.
But Cliff Schechter on Twitter, and, of course, We Act Radio, 1480 in D.C. Enjoy it. You can listen to it online at weactradio.com or in your radio device in your vehicle in Washington, D.C. Cliff, until next week.
Thanks a lot, buddy. You have a great week.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with our films of the week with Matthew Film Guy. Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Debaser, indeed. That's practically Matthew Film Guy's theme song. Matthew Film Guy at Langdon Boom on Twitter. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, we are now rotating through. We hear from, Chris Rosen. From that website and about film We hear from Isabel Gillies, best-selling author, famous actress.
Enjoying her segment very much.
She gave a great recommendation last week, which I've watched two-thirds of, but I watched that two-thirds twice, State of Mind. It is a documentary about two young North Korean women, girls, who are in what they call the mass games in North Korea, which I had never even been aware of. It's like one of those only documentaries you see that is completely behind the curtain of one of these closed communist autocratic societies. And it's fascinating. And Myla actually watched like two-thirds of it. The only part that we didn't show her was the clips of the war, which is always lovely to show a six-year-old child. But she's skittish. But it's fascinating documentary. And then, you know, we also, once a month, we're going to bring in a comedian. Next week is going to be Eddie Pepitone.
I love Eddie Pepitone.
And hopefully he'll give
Don't ask me to do his voice.
I won't.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You do Chris Rosen, right?
No, you asked me to do what's his name, your neighbor, who never showed up.
Who's that? Oh, Richard Kind?
Yeah, Richard Kind.
Oh, he's not my neighbor, but he's, you know, another. I mostly booked a show at my daughter's elementary school. So, for those who are new to the program, every week I bring somebody on to give me a Netflix streaming and or Amazon on demand show that I can find on my Roku. I have a problem now because I'm not allowed to go out and see movies, but I have a problem now. The other day, Myla is watching a version of The Nutcracker that I haven't seen. Now, understand, I've seen now four or five different versions of The Nutcracker. The San Francisco 1993 version, the George Balanchine Lincoln Center version, both the live and the film version with Macaulay Culkin in it. And so I'm watching this one. It is apparently a 1983 Seattle ballet filmic version as opposed to a live production. It's also one of the creepiest I've ever seen because not only do they not try and play away from the explicit pedophilia or implicit pedophilia of the Nutcracker, they're explicit about it. Herr Drosselmeyer is making leery gestures towards Clara, who is played by an older woman, and even the Nutcracker, the soldier, is looking back at Herr Drosselmeyer going like, what are you doing, dude? It's really creepy, but
Sam, I wouldn't have picked you for a Nutcracker expert. Is this like some did you have like some Christmas envy as a kid or something?
I never even knew what the Nutcracker was until I think it was one of our regular listeners, Neferkitty on IM, suggested that I show this to Myla 3 years ago, and Myla's back into the she watches this thing so much that if I play her the score, which I do almost every day now, the score, she will act out what is happening in the ballet just based on the music and will play different characters. Sometimes she's just like one of the kids who's sitting in the corner. One time she's like one of the fairy plum fairies or whatever it is, sugar plum fairies.
Sugar plum, sure.
It is, it really is the bane of my existence now.
Nice. Oh, but it sounds cute.
You didn't know what the Nutcracker was until 3 years ago?
I thought it was something Russian. What is a Jewish kid from Worcester going to like?
Oh, yeah, that's
like
what I'm
a boy, like a boy too. You know, the Nutcracker was just like I just thought it was something Russian.
Goyish.
Yeah, no, I didn't even know that. It was just completely out of. So here's the point. So she's watching this on Amazon, and I'm like, I didn't know where she was watching. I said, what is this? Did you get a new DVD? And she's like, no, I got it on Amazon. I'm like, what?
Uh-oh, she can work it.
She can work the Roku to get to the Amazon app, but that's not it. I'm like, wait a second. You bought this on Amazon? Yeah. She's looking at me like, of course I did. And I said, well, how did you do that? She goes, I just put the code in. You know, when you buy something on Amazon, you got to put in like a numeric code. And I put in 12345 so that Nikki and I wouldn't forget it. And apparently she saw me do it or figured it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
it cost me $4.
Time to think of a new code.
Yeah, no kidding. I had to wrap her fingers in gauze so she can't type it into the remote.
Wrap her fingers. Oh, I see. Now I see why she was so intrigued by the North Korean regime of ballet documentary.
No, I think they do that. I think they do that with I think like that was like a traditional thing they did with young Japanese girls. They wrap their feet in gauze or something so that
right.
their feet don't grow. I'm not sure exactly what the theory is
yeah.
behind that, but
little feet, sure.
All right, so
I'm sure you'll take care of it.
I will. Matthew, film. What do you got for us this week?
All right. Well, so oddly enough, I thought I'd point us to another side of the axis of evil this week. And I'm curious to know how much Iranian cinema
you've seen.
You know,
I think there's actually three sides. I mean, I don't know if you could say sides. Yeah, I guess you could. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you know, another axis. So have you seen much Iranian cinema, Sam?
Not in... no.
I'll take that as a no. Okay, that's great, because I'm about to recommend you not one, but two amazing Iranian films. I mean, Iran's back in the news a little bit. They're trying to get it out there. You know, and it's always in the context of should we bomb them? How should we bomb them? You know, how can we suppress them? And my hope is that people will see these kinds of films and realize that there's an actual very Western society going on over there, and they have very much the same problems that we do on the human level. And some of the most genius international cinema has come out of Iran in the last 20 years. So, for instance, the
now,
first
hold
movie...
Hold on for a second. Are you suggesting that Iranians are just like are like people?
I mean, yes, Sam.
These are not
yes,
all. Don't they all have X-ray vision that is going to like melt Israel and the United States?
Not all of them.
Oh, okay. All right, so fair enough.
Most of them, maybe.
Right.
But yes, as a Jew, as somebody who's an American, it's like Iran is all supposed to be completely evil and into wiping Israel out, but. They're just people, and you realize that their governments are just as messed up as ours are, with a few notable cultural exceptions. So this movie is called Offside, and it's by a guy named Jafar Pahlavi, whose name you might have heard because he was recently sentenced to house arrest for 6 years and banned from making films for 20 years by the Iranian regime.
Wow.
Which we don't really do that in this country, even though maybe you could argue we should in some cases. But in any case, he's made a lot of movies that are not overtly political, which is what's great about Offside. It's about a woman, a young girl, who wants to go to the soccer qualifying World Cup soccer game in 2006, and she's not allowed as a woman to attend these games. So she tries to sneak in dressed like a man and gets captured and put into this pen with a bunch of other women trying to get in. And it's actually a really great and interesting story just on a total human level, but it kind of gives you a peek into some of the actual social repression that goes on in Iran. And it came out in 2006, and I think you'll like it because, you know, another thing I appreciate about you, Sam, is that you have a place in your life for sports. You understand the bread and circuses angle, but you also, you're not such a purist that you can't enjoy a sporting event.
No, I absolutely can enjoy a sporting event. I love all sports. I've played all sports. I'm actually quite the athlete.
I've seen your calves.
Right. I have great calves. All right. So the movie is Offside, and
yeah,
so this guy. It's on Amazon. And so the filmmaker is still in house arrest.
That's right. He called out Ahmadinejad around the fraudulent 2009 elections. He accused him of faking the election results. So he was thrown in jail, and now he actually just released a movie that he shot surreptitiously on his iPhone and smuggled out the footage in like a birthday cake that just won an award at the Cannes Film Festival this year. So he's still making films, but yes, he was put under house arrest for speaking out against the regime. Jafar Pahlavi is his name.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. He shot it on his iPhone. That's cool.
So that one's not out yet, but I thought I would recommend this one to you because it's a really great movie, and it's very touching, and it's simple. It's not esoteric in the way that some of the other Iranian New Wave films are, but which I happen to love. And that brings me to the second film, if you're ready.
Yeah. Do you do this professionally? Because I mean, the level of quality of not only your recommendations but also just your presentation relative to a guy like, for instance, let's just pick somebody like Chris Rosen, for instance. is stunning.
Well, I appreciate that. I guess he makes it look easy.
Yeah, it's true. For other people.
Yeah, exactly. But I appreciate that. No, I don't do this professionally, so I'm not getting paid for this. I just enjoy talking to you about film, Sam. What can I say?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, no, I know. You don't have to tell me that. All right, so let's hear the second one.
All right, so the second one is by one of the sort of more avowed masters of the Iranian cinema, Abbas Kiarostami. And this movie is one of my all-time favorite movies, hands down, not just Iranian film. It's called Ten. And it revolves around 10 conversations shot in the car of a female taxi driver. So it's another look at female issues in Iran, oddly enough. But it's actually one of the best encapsulations of what it's like to be a kid trapped in a divorce that I've ever seen under any circumstances. There's definitely some Iranian sort of specific to Iran sort of issues about like how she wears her headdress, if she's a slut or not, if she has like some hair showing. But there's a performance by her child who she passes off between herself and her divorced ex-husband that is just amazing. As a child of divorce, Sam, maybe you'll identify with this. I don't know if you ever were talked shit to by one parent against the other, and this is like a perfect 100% encapsulation of what it's like to do that.
Oh, no, that never happened.
That never happened to you? You got lucky.
No, I'm joking.
I know you are.
All right.
So, so this is basically 10 conversations all shot through the dashboard of her car. So it's also sort of very formalistically rigorous, but it's actually really cool. It's not too out there and arty. It's just amazing. She picks up different women as she drives around Tehran, and, you know, some people yell at her, why are you a woman driving a car? And she picks up a prostitute and all the various conversations. And you slowly get to sort of see her life sort of elliptically sort of emerge. And as far as the Kiarostami film, this is like a great one to start with.
Great. Okay, so the films are where is that? Is that on Netflix or Amazon?
Yeah, 10 is streaming on Netflix.
Awesome.
Offside is streaming only on Amazon.
Oh, man, that's perfect. You know what I really feel like doing right now? Calling up Chris Rosen and asking him if he's ever said the words formalistically rigorous when it comes to a film. I want to see if like he's ever said. I don't think he's ever said that. I don't even think he's probably even said the different syllables in separate words that you could actually put together.
He might have said it about Transformers too. There's an argument to be made.
I guess that's true.
I bet he's heard of Abbas Kiarostami. I mean, he's. You know,
how much you want to bet?
Ooh, I don't know. $10,000.
Abbas Kiarostami.
Yeah. I think he has. He's like the avowed name in Iranian cinema. I mean, Pahani has been in the news a lot just because of the whole house arrest. And, you know, he was under regular arrest for a long time, too. They didn't know what was going to happen to him. And he's banned from making films for 20 years. So that's, you might have heard about that. Might have crossed his vertical desk. I don't know.
No. No way.
No.
All right.
Well,
Matthew, these are great suggestions. Offside and 10. I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to try and see if
yep.
I can just I am Rosen right now.
All right, and see if you – did you ever watch Four Lions, by the way, Sam?
No, I still got Four Lions on my list.
All right, I really want to hear what you make of that movie, so
okay.
Make that – put that at the top.
I watched it. It's good.
Good.
Oh.
You saw it, Matt?
Yeah, it's really good.
Awesome. Well, there you go. Now that's all you need to know.
All right, I'm going to watch it. I will. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Enjoy. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy. I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to see if he'll give an answer. Because I do not believe that let's see if this will work. I've got him on my Google. He may not answer. But I'm willing to bet anything he doesn't know Abbas Kiarostami. What should I do? Should I place a bet with the listeners? Like, no, don't put on that. Wait a second. Let's see. Come on, answer your phone, man. Don't be such a baby. He's sitting in an office, and he's afraid to answer his Google thing. What a baby. What a baby. Just do it. I'm in the middle of an important vertical editor meeting. All right, let's go to our There's just no way he knows. He doesn't know. No. I think he's going to go, wait, they make movies in Iran? I don't even think he realizes that they could make movies anywhere else but Hollywood. All right, folks, you know what time it is. It's time to listen to this week's offerings of our songs of the week. Shall we start with Jimmy Reefer Cakes?
Sure, let's do it.
He writes, in case you want to know how I really feel about Newt Gingrich, this song says it all. He is king hypocrite and a goddamn mofo son of a bitch. I hope you enjoy. And this is Newt Gingrich from Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Newt Gingrich. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. He got the big head. He got the beady little eyes. And you know everything coming out of his mouth is lies.
King Gingrich. King Hypocrite.
That's what he is.
Newt Gingrich.
You goddamn motherfucking son of a bitch.
Bitch, son of a bitch. Piss off.
Yeah, piss off, Newt Gingrich. You motherfucking piece of shit. You want to blame things on the media? Well, I don't know. You wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the media. The right-wing media, motherfucker. You piece of shit, Newt.
You suck,
Newt
Gingrich, King Hypocrite, Newt Gingrich,
you goddamn motherfucking son of a bitch,
son of a bitch,
piss off. Yeah, Newt, I hope you win the primary, motherfucker, because Obama's gonna eat you for breakfast.
Well,
Jimmy Reefercake really does not like Newt Gingrich.
He really seems to not like Newt Gingrich. I actually think we may even have to beep that stuff. Because we still try and make it a family show. Occasionally we drop an F-bomb or an S-bomb, as it were. But we will definitely post the original on the site. But we may have to... Because we get replayed on Fridays. But let me say that there was definitely a quality of the, you know, early Velvet Underground sort of, you know, jam tapes to that. I mean, a quality. But I'm going to give it one of these because I got to say, when we first started off, I didn't know there would be a chorus. Behind him, and I thought that was pretty impressive. And you know what? I don't like Newt Gingrich either. But I obviously get a lot more enjoyment out of Newt Gingrich than Jimmy Reefercake does. Let's go now to the screaming majority. Dave, Dan, Steve, and the Screamers. Dave Benjoya writes... As you know, Mitt Romney's greatest fear is that Newt will get elected president and eliminate all the taxes Mitt pays. If you remember that first debate this week where Newt said, I want to take everyone's the capital gains rate down to zero. And Mitt was like, you want me to pay no taxes? My God. You got to really appreciate how what a good citizen Mitt is. Here with a musical exploration of that fear. And P.S., Dan's excellent band, The K's, and my excellent band, Admiral Porkbrain, are both playing at the Parkside Lounge on Houston Street tonight. That's tonight, if you're in New York City. The K's and Admiral Porkbrain are playing at the Parkside Lounge on Houston Street tonight. Dan will be on at 9, the Porkbrains at 10. And it's all payoff. Here it is, Scream Majority.
Mitt got cocky and he got burned, so he had to release his tax returns. Of course, if Newt can really win this mess, then Mitt's fees are great white boat on the 19th century. Islands of wealth in a sea of penury. That's right, penury. Including the rich, back into Gingrich, helping out Romney while putting down his money. Two super fat cat populists. One guy's a vulture, the other's a lobbyist. Two real prizes, take your pick. One guy's a robot, the other's a prick. Oh, Mr. I only pay 14% while to balance your budget as president. A neutral conservative hero would turn its 14 into zero.
That's right. Penury. Is there any show anywhere that features such a band with such command of the English language? I would say no. I like that one. It'll all pay off for them, indeed. All right. Well, you know what? Let's try this. Before we go into the better half of the program, let's just try it one more time. See if I can get... Rosen on. We'll see if he knows the name, if he recognizes who this filmmaker is. He could very well be in a meeting. I think, isn't Hangover 3? Didn't they make a huge announcement that Hangover 3 is going to be made? He could be in like a high-level meeting about that or...
About it being announced, just the announcement of that there
That's
will be
big stuff. Big stuff. You got to bring in your vertical subheading editor. I think what he does is he actually edits the anything that's in 14-point font on the movie phone site. I think he does. He's in charge of all the 14-point font, and he's working his way up, but there's a good chance. I heard he made a pitch to see if he could also handle all the words that are in italics on the font, on the page. So he would then be, that would obviously increase his portfolio of things he's working on. Everything that is in 14-point font and italics, you know, that's when, honey, sorry, I'm going to be late tonight. All right, well, it seems Chris Rosen not there. We will... We'll head to the better half of the program, folks. You can support this show by becoming a member at majority.fm. We need your support. We need your support as much as we did the other day when I made a more dramatic plea. It's just that we can't maintain this level of drama. It's exhausting. So please, if you can become a member, and you recently just had an upgrade to a dirty effing hippie. Who was it? Alex. Alex, thank you. This is out to you, buddy. Can't afford to become a member, but still want access to the better half of the program? Email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll figure something out. You can also support the show by buying your crap that you buy from Amazon. Buy it through our link. We get a kickback. You can find it at Support the Show. The header at the top of the majority.fm page. Justforcoffee.coop. Excuse me, justcoffee.coop. For coffee, tea, chocolate, fair trade, organic. 10% discount, coupon code majority. It's great coffee. Give us a review on iTunes if you're one of those cheapies. I know you get it from iTunes. Give us a review there. Citizen Radio has like 100 more reviews than us. Also,
we also have more donate your account subscribers.
That's
than
right. You can always donate your account. Go to donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. And we got merch. All that. You can call me 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, or IM me at majorityfm. See you in the better half.